I'll bring you an agenda.
And I'm keeping Jane, who is also Aaron Rose.
Good, very good.
Yeah, that's like, he's a good guy.
Is there gonna be a lot of DCA turnover, or is it?
Sometimes it happens.
Yeah, I don't know how much turnover there'll be. I know that, I think Mike Gay is going to use somebody different than Al.
Well, as of last week, he didn't have any.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, I had somebody send a text asking if it was in the open, and I didn't share that with him. Am I seeing Mike today?
Mike?
I'm seeing Mike tomorrow.
He is tomorrow. Yes, sir, tomorrow.
Yeah, he made the comment during our orientation that he still hadn't hired anyone.
Well, I will tell you that it pays to really work hard, make the right choice, and I'm very fortunate when I need a name and a dish.
The recording is gone.
That she's available, and we've been working hard ever since. Okay, so we're on. I guess we're on. Phone's on. And let the record reflect, Matt Carlucci is in attendance.
And Will Lane, and Councilmember-elect, District 3.
And Councilmember Carlucci's council aide is taking notes and also recording, so she'll do both so she can make better minutes. And you'll get a copy.
Okay, gotcha. Does the recording get posted on the COJ website also, or? Okay, gotcha.
Glad you asked that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I had no clue.
I'm doing this right now because I think I've been okay up till now. But anyway, you always try to be on the straight and narrow.
Yep.
Welcome, council member. I look forward to working with you, and I think I mentioned to you earlier, I used to have these kind of meetings years ago mm-hmm. with other council members to learn what was important to them in their districts. Because as an at-large council member, it's important for me to know. And so your district, the new districts, we're going to print out maps of the new districts, but we hadn't quite got there mm-hmm. yet. But you're taking the district that Aaron Bowman had.
Yep.
Okay. And that's Queens Harbor and what?
Pretty much Queens Harbor, Girvan area, all the way down to JTB and everything between San Pablo.
Okay.
But nothing to the east of San Pablo, so right. San Pablo's a boundary. And then Kernan. But now the biggest difference between the 2015 map is I also have the town center in UNF there. So it does
okay.
a little carve out of that at the end okay. just so they can get to the population requirement. So it's one of the more dense districts.
Yeah.
Like I have the advantage that I can pretty much do a relatively big circle in 20 minutes and kind of touch every major intersection in the district, which is nice.
That's good.
Yeah. Has its own pains being that dense, but at least for me getting around and seeing different projects, it makes it pretty nice.
Well, is there still a lot of growth going on in zonings and so
yeah,
forth?
We don't have a lot pending.
Okay.
In fact, either Aaron or Jamie could probably correct me, but as of now, I don't think there's anything pending for new projects.
Mm-hmm.
But we got a number that have broken ground recently.
Uh-huh.
So there's a big corner lot project right on the north side of Beach Boulevard between Kernan and Hodges.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big, I forget the name of it, but a big neighborhood of townhomes and apartments going up at the corner of San Pablo and Beach as well.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I mean, I don't want to say we're at our limit, but we've seen tremendous growth the past decade.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived in the district now for 13 years, I believe
okay.
it is, and just tremendous growth.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, our roads have been able to keep up, but we still got a couple places that I think as we continue to see growth. And I'll tell you right now, one of my priorities is really staying in tune with whatever happens south of JTB, because even though that's not our district, any growth that we see south of the JTB area. They're going to be coming to our schools, to our retail shops, things like that. So want to make sure as we're looking at these new developments south of JTB that we're making sure we're doing the right studies to make sure that the infrastructure to the north of these developments can support what the plans are.
South of JTB, that's very forward thinking, I have to tell you. Sherry,
yes,
although I don't want to close the door completely, can we close it a good bit of the way?
Yes.
But leave it open enough so people know there's a meeting going on? I generally like to leave doors completely open, but we're like at a little after lunchtime, I guess.
Yeah.
I think there's also a group out front protesting something.
Oh, okay.
That's probably what most of the noise is.
Yeah. Well, you know, do you mind if I maybe give you a suggestion that I've incorporated over time, mostly from the School of Hard Knocks that might help you?
Mm-hmm.
And I've mentioned this to the previous councilperson, but your district still probably has the potential of a good number of zonings would be my guess. And then knowing what's happening south of JTB, I was a district council member before this term. I've been an at-large council member, I guess going on four times now, and a district council member once.
Okay.
Loved being a district council person. I mean, I really enjoyed it because you were like the mini mayor of that particular area, and so much of what you wanted to do, you could get done. But my district went from San Marco down to Sunbeam Road, but it went all the way out to where the town center is now, except there was no town center.
Right.
That was my zoning.
Yeah.
And
I was probably one of your constituents at Bay Meadows and Southside. That's where I grew up. So.
I went to Checkers Barbecue, which is a little barbecue joint on St. Augustine Road behind where my State Farm office is. And that's where T.R. Heinlein opened up the town center. Papers and that's, and I was real impressed. I was just out there the other day, and I told my wife, I can't recognize where I'm at anymore.
Yeah, not to reminisce, but that's where we would take our. You remember the sand mines?
Yeah.
Like that's where we would take our dogs out, and
we
didn't have all these dog parks. We had the sand mines, so we take them out there.
Yeah. Oh, I remember. Yeah. So when I got in office back then, they don't think they do this now, but back then, you know, each district council person had an assigned planner from the planning department who would stay in touch with you. And that planner might have had two or three other council members, but would stay in touch with you about zoning matters in your district. I don't think they do that now, but there probably is somebody in the planning department that maybe.
Yeah, and Jamie has someone he wants to introduce me to. I believe her name is Rose, not 100%, but he had someone that he said most of the planning projects will go through this person, and so it's worth me getting to know her.
That's
on my growing to-do list here.
Yeah, that's and that's one of the great things about Jamie, because he's been a councilman before.
So right.
That's a good idea. So what you can do, and what I did, was I try to have a meeting once or twice a month with that planning director for my area. And I mentioned to the planning director, if somebody comes in and they're going to file for a rezoning and they're just checking it out, you know, maybe ask them if they'd like to, might be a good idea for them to give me a call. And I can chat with them about it.
Okay.
And I think you can still do that today. I mean, it was quasi-judicial back then, but what it allowed me to do was to stay ahead. You don't want to get caught behind the curve on
right.
rezoning. So I think Jamie's getting set up there perfect. And then I just met every month, every twice a month, and I stayed ahead of every one of them. Everybody in my district got their zoning except for one, and she's a very, very good friend. I just couldn't support it. It was it's a very small rezoning. Thank goodness she was a very good sport, and today she
Okay.
But my rule of thumb on zonings was, you know, you're more inclined to get my support, a lot more inclined to get my support, if your zoning is adding value to the existing neighborhoods mm-hmm. around. If it's not, if it's just a place where builder or developer says, oh, here's a piece of property, I'm going to go in there and build, look for my next piece of property.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard that. Make sure it's adding, not detracting, and to make sure that it overall fits in with what the landscape and
I'm
style
I'm not sure why is. I'm meeting with you.
Well, I got some more things on my list, too. So.
Yeah. But I just wanted to share that with you because mm-hmm. when knowing that area a little bit.
And I realize everybody thinks they're always zoned out, but I'm sure there's going to be many, many more in the next 4 to 8 years
there will be. Yeah.
If people are creative, so.
Yeah, they are. Oh, yeah, they're creative, all right. And then, of course, the people that represent the developers, you know, Steve Ebenow and Paul Harden, they're all my friends. They just got a job to do. And mm-hmm. They know sometimes we'll be on the same side and sometimes we won't. You do your job, I got to do my job, but... So my wife and I, Saturday was supposed to be a rainy day all day, mm-hmm. and I haven't been and gotten any new clothes for a long time, so I go to Dillard's. And so my wife is a shopping queen. She knows how, I mean, that was my area, and that was one of the original developments was Dillard's.
Yeah.
I couldn't even find Dillard's. And she said, well, you need to take a ride here. And went, hold up, and I get in the other lane. Yeah, I finally found my way there this weekend.
Well, thanks for spending money in District 3.
Well, you're welcome. And we did spend a little bit. Nice young man in the suit department. So tell me, anyway, I'm interested to know really how I can help you.
Yeah, so I'll just go through my list here quick. So I mentioned certainly development as it connects south of JTB and what the future looks like.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at a parks map, District 3 is fairly sparse, and I think what's driven that through the years is that we probably have the most amount of gated communities of any other district in Jacksonville. I mean, Queens Harbor, Jack's Golf, Glen Kernan, The Woods, I'm missing four or five off the top of my head. And a lot of these gated communities have really nice parks inside, private parks essentially. And so, especially when I went door to door, when I would ask constituents like, hey, how can we make the district better? Parks came up a lot. So we have Patton Park, which is primarily just soccer. We have Abbas Park, which they did some upgrades last year. That's really the only what I'd call like the kids' playground park. And then Chet's Creek Elementary Church, we have use of their playground when it's not a school day, so mm-hmm. Saturday and Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it. So three parks is well below average for district.
That is a good observation.
Yeah. And one thing, I need to get on the same page with Councilman Bowman and Jamie, but there is money earmarked for a study for a community center because there is a spot of land available in mm-hmm. Patton Park that could potentially be used for that. So that is a bill that is up for vote tomorrow. It's part of the overall, I believe it's some close to $50 million on how all the park
money is
being allocated.
And that's a good list.
Yeah. I think that's really, so that'll be a focus of mine. What do we have, what's available and what can we do with this land here for the betterment of the constituents?
So that's got a community center included in it?
Yeah. And my understanding, it's the study.
Oh, a community center. Okay.
Yeah.
So after the study, do you think the location is going to be at that particular area?
Yes, yeah, because that's
where was that again?
Patton Park. Patton Park is, I mean, it's known as the soccer park, but in the very beginning of the park, there's a little sliver of land that if you drive in and take a right, that we would have the ability to build something there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then really, so, I mean, those were the biggest kind of District 3 things only. I mean, we're always going to have infrastructure stuff that pops up. My opinion, overall, I think we have pretty good infrastructure, mainly mm-hmm. because it's a newer part of town. Like,
yeah.
when I grew up, Kernan, I think, it was probably a dirt road when I was born, then it became paved, and then now it's three lanes in some parts of it. And we just finished the Girvin Road widening and improvement projects up there. So I think we're in good shape for now, but again, it's all driven by what new growth we're going to see really south of JTB connecting to all three of the north-south routes, which are Kernan, Hodges, and San Pablo, my community. And then one of the things, kind of more a greater Jacksonville passion, is I'm excited that we're going to have 6 veterans on council. I think that's probably the highest percentage we've ever had. There was a time when, there was a time Councilman Bowman was the only one in one of his terms. And again, you don't have to be a veteran to be on city council.
Yeah.
But I think me being stationed at 2 of the 3 major bases in the area, really just trying to advocate for, we mentioned what's going on out front, but we hardly ever talk about the 30,000 armed service members here in Jacksonville that signed up to support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
We hardly ever talk about them. It's what's going on out front that makes the news more so than anything else. And 3,000 of them are getting out of the military each year. And yeah. So I want to make sure we're doing our best to retain as many of them, because you get people that already live in houses here, already live in apartments.
Right. Okay.
They don't have to find new homes, and they're well-trained. And at 22, they've been through a lot and seen a lot more than most of their peers. So how can we make sure we're helping them with their continuing education, mm-hmm. landing them in good jobs, things like that. I know the city has done some good work, but just make sure that we continue that work and make it even better to see what we can do to support our veterans.
How many years were you in the Navy?
So if you count my time at the Naval Academy to the time I got out of the reserves, it was, I think, 11 or 12 years total that I wore a uniform.
Wow. You include the Naval Academy.
Mm-hmm. I joke that there's a point in my 20s that both my career and my first house were underwater, just because being on a submarine and getting a mortgage in 2003. So it was,
funny. You were underwater if you come by my office, I have my stepfather's lamp. It's a Naval Academy lamp,
okay.
I think.
All right.
And he was a retired captain.
Okay. Awesome.
My mother was widowed 3 times.
First
time, her husband Milton, he died in the Korean War.
Okay.
He was in the Navy, served 3 years, got out, and was talked into joining the reserves. The Korean War kicked in, and he went back to the Navy full time. And he was a mechanic grade 3 on planes. He was flying. They were starting up training flights. And he was on one of the training flights. You know, it was some of the newer. Anyway, they crashed on Fleming Island.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So he died. He was like 25. And that was my brother's father. And she married my dad. And he was so flat-footed, he couldn't get into the service. He tried every service he could. I think right now, if you're flat-footed, they say, come on in. But back then, they couldn't. And then he died at 57. My mother remarried a gentleman named Major McCrae. And he was a captain. And a great guy. My mother, she married 3 good ones.
Lots of good batting average.
Yeah, good, very good batting average. But I appreciate your service to our community.
Thank you.
To our country. You're one of the few people who say you serve not only the country, but your community.
Yeah, and the third one, my day job, supporting veterans advocacy as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You're with the
Wounded Warrior. Yeah.
Wounded Warrior.
Yeah.
It's like I met somebody else that was a member of Wounded Warriors.
Our CEO is on a lot of civic boards, so I'd be surprised if you ran into him.
What's his name?
Mike Linnington, real tall guy.
Yeah, so I'm taking notes as we're going, and 6 veterans on council, and your tenure. And I said, man, we should have a lot of veterans on the council because we are a Navy town.
Yeah, and I know it was, I think, WJCT was talking about how I think it's 10 or 15% of the Jacksonville population are veterans. We're actually at 30% now on council. So, I mean, you're never going to match the community exactly, but I think it's good just to have that mix. And it's a bipartisan mix as well, too, of veterans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Well, serving your country does not require a particular party.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. What else is...
Really just, I mean, I know we're going to have nothing we need to talk about here, but there's going to be a lot of stuff come in here, that's going to result in a lot of debate. And I've always been a facts-first person, and really just hoping to use my my finance and procurement. I think I'm the only one with the words finance and procurement in their job title. Just hoping to use that experience to just help us arrive at the best fact-based answers. And when I say fact-based, those that are best for our community and our taxpayer dollars as well.
That will serve you well.
I joke that I ran the most boring campaign because I ran pretty much exclusively on my budget and infrastructure experience.
Yes.
Nothing else. Nothing else crazy beyond that. So.
Thank goodness mine was real boring, but well, you know, my job as an at-large is to try to help every district, you know, to the extent that I can. Mm-hmm. And doesn't mean I'll make you happy on every vote that I got, but hopefully make you happy a whole heck of a lot more than not. The way I look at politics, some of my best allies on the council, you know, those that kind of saw things maybe the same way I did, and in the voting patterns might have been somewhat the same. I mean, everybody's your ally. I mean, sometimes even the most unlikely person will be your ally, right, in politics. And I'm very moderate. Al Ferraro is very conservative, but sometimes we teamed up to make very great allies.
Mm-hmm.
But the people, when I know somebody's just voting because that's just how they believe, not because they're being told or nudged or pushed to vote that way because of some special interest or, whoever, whatever. I can respect a disagreement like that. You know, that's what you went overseas and under the water to protect.
Right.
Was our ability to agree to disagree at times. You know, but as an at-large council member, I really want to help district council members achieve what they want to or what they want to. Because the one time I was a district council person, I mean, there are times when the at-large council members made the difference.
Sure.
And helping me get something across the goal line and not, you know. My interest I'll just share with you some of my thoughts. We met before, but we couldn't talk about anything except, you know, our backgrounds. But the issues that are important to me is the old urban core, and bringing that up to speed. There's so much in the old urban core where there's no curb and gutter. We're so used to curb and gutter, you know, but there's no curb and gutter. Coy's Creek is a flood disaster.
Mm-hmm.
People have drowned because of some bad summer rains in McCoy's Creek. It's almost like a mini, was it Black Creek that overflows all the time?
Yep.
It's almost like that in a small sort of a way. And people have got caught in the cars and died. But they're straightening out that McCoy's Creek to its original, its original path.
Right.
You know, it's been abused so bad over so many years, and that money I think is in the CIP to do that. Folks that have failing septic tanks.
Yep.
And I went out to a project not long ago, and former Mayor Hazuri, Councilman Hazuri, he and I were dear friends for many, many years. But anyway, we teamed up and we got $100 million in the CIP after the gas tax passed for failing septic tanks. So I went out to look at one of the projects, and the gentleman with the JEA, they were facilitating project because they did water and sewer as well as electric. And I said, you know, the difference in the quality of life of these people, Greg, must be between night and day. He says, Councilman, he said, that's why I like this work. He says, I have to tell you that there's people that live in this neighborhood and on holidays, Thanksgiving, have family over, but the bathroom could only be used maybe three times. be just what you and I experienced.
Yeah, that's a great example of like an issue that never came up in my district with all the news, new houses, but one with certainly keeping the greater Jacksonville in mind. We got to kind of move the city forward and remedy that as best as we can.
Well, that's near and dear to me. People like to talk about broken promises, and I think that's an argument that could be made. I look at it a little differently because my father was on the first city council in the second. He served just shy of three terms of mm-hmm. for the Florida Senate, and he made it on up. And my father worked hard for those kind of issues. But when he got in office, Jacksonville, it wasn't only, failing septic tanks. People wanted to get on water and sewer, but the St. John's River had like 60 outfalls where raw sewage was just drained.
Yeah.
And the U.S. News and World Report called the St. John's River a flowing cesspool.
Yep.
And so they had to deal with that before they could deal with anything. Much less all the other expenses that came along with building a new government, and suddenly the county areas were now city areas, and so forth. The taxpayers back then, the problem with the reason, one of the reasons we went, some of the reasons we went with consolidation is a lot of corrupt politicians. That was a crisis. The schools were accredited. That was a crisis. The river was being polluted. That was a crisis. And then you had a duplication of services mm-hmm. that nobody really knew because they were busy with their lives and taking their kids to school mm-hmm. and working and so forth. But you had two parks departments. You had for the county, one for the city, fire department, two. Police departments, there was two. Library boards, there was two. And there was so much, there was a city council, a city commission, a county commission. It was the weirdest government, And if you go on YouTube and you're bored and you want to just see something out of the past, it was a Channel 4 special, and it was called Government by Gaslight. And you can pull it, and I put Government by Gaslight Jacksonville, if you went to YouTube, you would put that in. And it was done back in probably 1965. And it's an old black and white, But it will absolutely show you that it's got one guy, he's standing on top of a big map of Duval County, and he's got all the different agencies, that are on placards on top of the county. And he explains the problem. And basically, it was who speaks for Jacksonville, and nobody.
No one.
Really
yeah.
Hayden Burns, for the most part, did, but that was it. But all of that created the reason for. So, as the campaign for consolidation went along, the idea was reducing the number of duplicative services would result in a less taxes,
mm-hmm.
But then by the same token, so that was kind of being touted, but at the same token, people were touting how consolidation was going to bring in more taxes from the county that would benefit the city, because the old city limits was going bankrupt
mm-hmm.
Because of what was then white flight. And so the old city limits was going bankrupt, so the idea was the old city limits, the old urban core is what I call it,
mm-hmm.
that had all those failing septic tanks and still do in many, many, many areas, that once they were consolidated, then the city would benefit from the tax dollars from the county. So some people were being told, you're going to get more services, you'll get water and sewer lines, and so on and so forth, and then other people were expecting lower taxes because it was a difficult time for that council
sure.
to juggle all that. And then I guess when the new council came together in 1968, I think it was 1970, 76, 74, 76, that the outfalls had finally been closed for a number of years, and handstands were
skied on the river.
So the river is now open for swimming.
Yeah.
Not sure how much swimming was going on, but
yeah.
But it was a big day, though. It was like it was a giant day in the city, but they still hadn't. So it's been a long time catching up on what I'm saying. I'm saying all that to say this. I really want to see those infrastructure down at Oregon Corps taken care of. So that's one of the things important to me. And I love Jacksonville history, as I'm sure that you do also. So I tend to gravitate towards legislation sometimes that makes us makes it easier or enables us to save some of our
your rehab bill.
Yes, yep. My rehab bill. And then the Laura Street Trio will be coming up, and that's one you'll probably look at pretty hard because of your financial background.
The Laura Street Trio, which I actually got it here, will that be included as, like, incorporated into the budget cycle, I guess, or how would that be handled, like, as part of the CIP?
No, I think that's a really good question, and I can't tell you for sure because we got a new mayor coming in, and so Mayor-elect Deegan will have to take her, put her take on it.
Okay.
But I think it would be money that would come from fund balance, and some think it might be a completion grant, which kind of protects the city in a way, but if they complete the work, we don't get any interest on the grant. Or it might be done as a loan, some type of a loan, and where the interest of the loan money might help the critical quality of life issues that Michael Borland raised.
Okay.
In most cases, I would probably really look at a project like that with a harder view because of the amount of money that, you know, is incentive-wise, is going towards it, is more than what would go to most projects like that, I think. And I think the council auditors would probably attest to that. But the other thing is that Trio has been sitting there for 20 years, and time is its enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so unique to Jacksonville, and it's so unique to our history. And what's going to be placed there, it would play such a huge role in the old urban core that, you know, sometimes you spend more because it's a loss leader. And that's probably how I would look at the Laura Street Trio. But if you ever have a chance, if you walk underneath the Laura Street Trio, it's an incredible thing to walk through underneath in the basement. You got probably 25 vaults down there. And some of them are so big that they will become like conference rooms where people can go in that vault, and there'll be wine stored, and there'll be maybe a conference table where businesses can come and bring their employees or their executives and have meetings and so forth. And then there'll be a restaurant. And so it's a great project. And so in 2003, I hope you don't mind listening to these stories because some people don't like
this. No, the background helps.
I was council president in 2003, or 2002, I think, and John Delaney was mayor. We had a wonderful working relationship, and the Laura Street Trio had been touted as the most significant historic corner in three buildings in Jacksonville, but it had not been locally landmarked, and the ownership was under European control. I'm not sure what country, they made from Germany, I don't know who, doesn't matter. They owned the buildings, and they were fixing to take the wrecking ball to it. And that would have sent shockwaves through a good portion of Jacksonville, at those buildings succumbed to the wrecking ball. So I went and spoke with the mayor, John Delaney, and made my case. He agreed. And the city bought those three buildings. And so they've been bought by the city since 2003. And then, you know, I ran. ran for mayor, didn't make it, so I was out. John Delaney was term limited out, and John Pettigrew came into office. And John, at that point in his career, his second term, I think, well, he had a tough 8 years because the economy was in tough shape.
Yep.
So I'm not trying to question why he did this or did that, but long story short, we did have an unfunded liability of sorts 2 or 3 years after he got into office. So he gave the Laurel Street Trio to the firefighters.
Okay.
Or to the Jacksonville Fire and Police Pension Fund that they could use as kind of collateral towards that.
Okay.
And then eventually it left the hands of the Police and Fire Pension Fund and went to another developer who messed it up, and then it went to Steve Atkins. Steve, nobody will ever guess, know how much money and how much sweat and tears that young man has put into the Laurel Street Trio. To the extent that the city required him, after he obtained the building and was starting trying to make, you know, put together a development deal. But in Steve Atkins, actually, he did the renovation of the Barnett, the old Barnett building. Okay. Well, because Marble Bank was here and the Barnett was there, there was a tunnel that went underneath Laurel Street from the Marble Bank to the Barnett. And they were redoing sidewalks along Laurel Street. You'll notice Laurel Street may have a little different look in its, you know, signs of the roads, you know, and some of the street lighting. It looks fabulous. And that was one of the things John Payton did towards the end of his career when he had a couple of nickels to spend,
right,
finally. But Steve was required, where the new sidewalks were going to go, any tunnel underneath those sidewalks, he had to pay to fill all that in, close it up. I mean, it cost.
So it doesn't exist there anymore. It had to be filled. Okay.
Yeah, he had to fill it in. And he's going, why me? That's city property. Well, that was the requirement. And so. Okay, thank you. Anyway, anyway, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, I also kind of gravitate towards. And in addition to, I like to see zonings done in such a way that it.
Yeah. My big thing that I'm going to have a lot of questions on is it just seems like there's so many things that are out there that are going to require funding.
Oh, I know.
It's just things like on my radar, I had right down Laurel Street Trio, but Mosh. I know they're doing a private fundraising drive, but
right,
it seems like wherever they get first what they need, maybe a city ask. The jail. I know that's Council President Salem said that's going to be one of his priorities. Obviously the stadium. Probably the biggest one of all there. So it just seems to me there's so many moving parts in downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the DIA is working on it too, just to make sure we got a smart consolidated plan, if you will, of all the different projects and timing and how we fit it all in within the next five yeah. years, 10 years to
well,
to march
you,
on smartly.
You just nailed it, because there and those are big asks, but you also got, you still got the infrastructure
yeah.
asks.
Yeah.
And it is really expensive too. Come on in, Jamie.
Hello, everyone.
I was just putting on the dog for you a few minutes ago with your council member. So those are very expensive. So the next mayor is going to have now the city. I got to tell you, the 16 gas tax came in.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're for it or against it, but you know, it passed, and that really helped our city become much more flush with money.
Yep.
And so prioritizing some of that. And one day I can tell you the story about how the jail found its way to where it was.
Yeah, I had. I guess I had always assumed it was from the 60s or 70s, not the 90s.
The location was finally found in 1988 or so. And long story short, we run a court order to find a location for a new jail because the old jail was overcrowded. God forbid about overcrowded schoolrooms, but don't overcrowd a jail cell. But long story short, so we had like, I think 6 months maybe to find a location. And every location that we tried to go to, there was lawsuits that were being threatened. In Tommy, Missouri, was the mayor, and the time's ticking down. And finally, Mayor Hazard and the rest of the council landed on the spot that was in now, because it was the only piece of property city owned with the right zoning that you could put a jail. Now, back then, there were no Zoom meetings, which might help us this time around. Because the courthouse was over here. And they wanted, the attorneys wanted, and the judges wanted the new jail close by. And they really pressed that hard. So that's why the jail wound up.
I didn't even know till recently, so I grew up here calling it the jail, but it's really the pre-trial detention center.
Pre-trial.
So once you're sentenced, you don't go back there. You go somewhere else, is my understanding.
That's right. They're not prisoners. They're pre-trial detention center. That's a very good observation. And it does need to be moved. It will be a Herculean task to find out where it gets moved. I'm not sure if it's a priority that is before the stadium and maybe some of the others, but at some point, it is, downtown does not need to adorn itself with the jail. Where it's at, so the committee might have some good work to get into. But that's kind of how it happened.
It was,
it was a federal timetable, and so we.
Yeah, I figured the solution was probably arrived at somewhat begrudgingly by all involved. So.
Yeah, well, and this is where the Zoom thing comes in, and then I'll stop sharing. So back then the lawyers wanted their. The people that they represented in the pretrial detention center
to go back and forth,
back and forth to the courthouse. There was no Zoom meetings back then. It might be that technology might help with that particular matter.
Mm-hmm.
That was a really big deal. So there you have it. Now you know the rest of the story.
All right. Well, thank you for that. So press mic, I guess, if we're done, or
I'll adjourn the meeting. Hey, listen, thank you very much.
No, thank you for this. This is very helpful.
And,
I appreciate you helping us, new guys.
I shouldn't say this. I was